Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio, and how are you? It's the turning of the seasons. Love this time of year. The aspens turning golden, the leaves shimmering in an evening sun with a slight breeze, or in Wyoming, a stiff breeze. You know, that's why they call them quakies. And we're going to be talking today about the shimmerings of the economy and the shimmerings of voter fraud. You know, there's a wide range of topics we could be covering. You've heard all the hype and crap and talking head nonsense on the debates. Here's my feelings on the debates. If Trump can come away with some good zingers, if he can make it mano a mano rather than man against woman, he's going to do just fine. And if he does just fine, he's going to win this election. I've kind of said that all along. I think the polls are at best misstated. I think there's a wellspring of votes out there for Donald Trump that are not being counted on purpose, I might add. You know, pollsters have their shtick, too. And the array of forces aligned against Donald Trump makes me even more firmly for him. I talked several shows ago, and over the course of several shows, relatively briefly, but with some substance, about the fact that this is not an election between Democrats, but there are no Democrats, progressives, and conservatives. This is not an election between Republicans and Democrats and libertarians. This is not an election between left and right. This election is about national sovereignty, America keeping its national identity, along with the other countries on the planet, I might add, and globalism, one world government. The NWO, as some people call it, the New World Order. And the forces which are aligned against Donald Trump are all the forces of globalism. Hillary Clinton is the epitome of globalism. She is the product of globalism. She is the champion of globalism, as is her would-be predecessor, Barack Hussein Obama. Now, to a lesser extent, so is George Bush. And to a lesser extent, kind of, was Bill Clinton. Senior Bush was a globalist. Ronald Reagan was really the last president we had who was an American president, not a president of the world. I'm going to talk about that in depth next week, so I'm just going to touch on it here in this show. But I have some startling facts and figures. I have some startling, and I've been working on it for about a month. But there is a plan afoot by the globalists. Trump will be a huge disruptor to that plan, which is why the money is against him, the elite are against him, the establishment are against him, and the globalists in foreign countries are against him. You need to understand what globalism is. It is really important. And you need to understand what's at stake for American sovereignty. And by the way, the attack on the Second Amendment, I've often called the 150 or whatever million armed Americans the last bulwark, not only for freedom in the United States, but for freedom for the world. This is why the UN has a small arms treaty which will basically usurp sovereign control of arms in the hands of civilians. Globalism is a real and is a real, present, and clear danger to your way of life, to your family, to your finances, to your safety, to your security. And the globalists don't care. They don't care about you. They don't care about your finances. They don't care about your health. They don't care whether you live or die. Witness the 500,000 to million people that have died in the Mideast for globalist agendas, whose blood is directly on the hands of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John Kerry, and certain European leaders, all of whom are part of the global cabal. But the move toward globalism is being waged on several fronts. The war on cash, we're going to talk about that next week. You think you're going to be using cash in the future? No, the globalists don't want you using cash. They're even talking about outlawing every bill down to $20, eventually outlawing all paper money. It'll all be digital. How easy would it be for them to control it then, eh? And we're going to be talking about the replacement of the dollar. And I've talked about this in a number of shows. You can put it in the search bar. The word currency, the word U.S. dollar, reserve currency, and you can pull up those shows. And we're going to talk about some of the social pressures that are being used and the lever, which is climate control, that is being used to promote the global agenda. So please tune in next week, because I think you'll find that show fascinating. It's going to pull together a number of dots which you have been vaguely aware of into one big ball of scary stuff. And it's irrefutable. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about the deplorables. The deplorables, as Hillary calls us all. And we're going to talk about how we can revive good old American know-how. Because, you know, the economy, everybody says, all the talking heads, small business is the engine of job growth. Well, you know, it's only partly right. The real engine of job growth is new business formation. And we're going to talk about how to rev that up, ramp that up. Some of those policies being Trump's policies, and some being over and above his policies, but tying in. Because that is the key to job creation, good paying job creation in the United States, and self-sufficiency and self-reliance, the values that this country was founded on. And we're going to talk about voter fraud. You know, I think the only way Trump can lose this election, there are two ways. Number one, he eats his foot in some reprehensible manner, or should I say unwise manner, in this lead up to the election, or he has a horrible debate performance. And the other way is voter fraud. Do not underestimate the power of voter fraud to influence an election. In previous shows several years ago, I talked about Al Franken, the Democratic senator, Minnesota. And in the end, he won his seat by 337 or 339 votes in the state of Minnesota. And after the election, it became apparent that approximately 900 felons who have no voting rights voted in that election. And that 90% of those 900 felons just so happened to cast their ballots, which were counted and could not be uncounted, according to the Democratic Minnesota Supreme Court, for Mr. Franken. Mr. Franken's Senate seat, which was the 51st vote, if you want to look at it this way, for Obamacare, and a host of other ratty progressive deals that Barack Obama pushed through when he had control of the Senate and the House his first 2 years. 300 fraudulent votes, illegal votes, votes born of purposeful voter fraud is what created that Senate seat, which passed that legislation, which now is hurting tens of millions of Americans and, as we're going to talk about later in the show, hurting that how to revive good old American know-how, new business creation. It all ties in, folks. And then, because I got a bunch of emails and people really liked it, I'm going to devote the last 10 or 15 minutes of the show and I'm going to go down the headlines for this week. All these articles are posted below. If you're listening to this on the podcast, and you people who are listening on AM, go to the website, threadswestseries.com. www.ontherightsideradio.com. That's on the rightsideradio.com. You can read those articles. They're all categorized for you AM listeners. Your podcast listeners are familiar. They're all categorized by category. Easy to find, easy to click on, easy to read. And boy, is there a wealth of information drawn from literally hundreds of sources that I peruse every week. So, let's start with the deplorables, shall we? You know, I'm proud to be a deplorable. I love deplorables. I love people who believe in faith, the Constitution, the sovereignty of the United States, equal laws applying equally to all people of any race, creed, religion, or origin, of a nation taking its own security in its hands, of creating, maintaining, and enforcing a border, and laws which govern immigration, a nation which employs common sense in maintaining and optimizing the security of its citizens. So, Hillary, I am proud to be a deplorable. And I don't care if you think I'm misogynist or Islamophobic or racist or xenophobic or all little phobic terms you threw out when you use that deplorable statement. And I have a feeling that most of my listeners feel the same. And you know, with good old American know-how, this has spawned an industry, the deplorable industry, deplorable t-shirts. You know, I'm a lovable deplorable or whatever they are. Deplorable hats, deplorable sneakers. I mean, deplorable bumper stickers and buttons and banners. I think it is poetic justice that Hillary's comment, besides hurting her election chances, has fueled an even higher energy in the ranks of the deplorables. Because the deplorables are at least half of this country. That's at least 160 million people she called deplorable, who said that we should be ignored, that we had no right to be here, that we had no right to our beliefs, and that our beliefs were racist, xenophobic, Islamophobic, misogynistic, and all the other crap that she spewed. Well, I don't know how many of you saw her interview. She's, you know, going for the millennial vote. The youngsters, they're not big fans of Trump, but they can't stand Hillary. I mean, they do understand a scummy liar when they see one, although they didn't recognize it in Obama. And so she's going for the millennial vote. I don't know how many of you guys saw this. I think you can dialed up. I don't know the name of the show or the name of the host, but Hillary Clinton's comedy interviews would probably get you, would get you the video of it. And this guy, she was on this show that millennials listen to, I guess, all the time. It's a big web podcast or something. And this guy just beat her to a pulp. And she was terrible. This was supposed to be a comedy deal where she was supposed to show her comedic side, her warmth and fuzzy nature, gag me. And most of the time she sat there stone-faced or with her eyebrows furrowed with this thin, pursed lips of disapproval. And this guy went through a whole... He asked her at one time, he said, where do you get your pantsuits? And she kind of cautiously answered, well, why do you want to know? And the guy said, well, because, you know, I need an outfit for Halloween. I mean, he was really funny. And he ends the interview with, you know, this has been great, Mrs. Clinton, or Secretary Clinton, whatever he called her. I'd really like to stay in touch with you. How should we do that? What do you think? Email? I mean, I cracked up, and she sat there stone-faced, didn't say a word. I mean, she had every chance to be humorous, to poke fun at herself, to be self-deprecating, you know, all the things which would make her personable. Of course, you can't make somebody what they are not. And she sat there and didn't say a word. She just pursed her lips and kind of glared at him. It was great. So what do you think, Hillary? How do we stay in touch? How about email? It was just great. Anyway, I wandered off there because it was so amusing. The deplorables, I think, are going to carry the day. And I think that the black vote is going to be much more strongly in Trump's direction than anybody anticipates. I think the Hispanic vote is going to be better, not strong, but better than most people anticipate. I think in the end, women who are thinking will be voting for Trump or not voting for Hillary, which is the same as at least half a vote for Trump. And I think that both Jill Baby over there for the Green Party and Gary and crew for the Libertarians are going to carry, right now I think they're at about 10 or 11% combined of the vote. Gary's at like, in the Libertarian Party, is at like 9, and Jill Stein in the Green Party is at like 1 or 2. I think they're going to carry a bigger part of the day. And I think there's a lot of people that aren't going to vote. I think there's a lot of things that are going to happen on Election Day that all the talking heads, the pundits, and the scurrilous crew who engineer elections in the United States are not counting on whatsoever. That's my feelings. I guess in 45 days, we'll know. So let's start off the show, shall we? Now that I've rambled on here for a while. How to revive good old American know-how. In other words, folks, how do we stimulate new business formation in the United States? Let me give you some statistics, which are frightening, actually. Starting with the Great Recession in 2007 and 2008, there was a period of time, believe it or not, that new business formation was actually less than business failure. In other words, there was a net negative loss of businesses and a huge net negative loss of new businesses. Now, a new business, as we all know, it might be a single person. It might be a person who has an employee or two. It might be a new business which over the course of a year sees itself grow and hires a few more people. The sum total of this, if you think about this, If you have 1 million people, which is not a lot of people in a country of 350 plus or minus million, who start a new business, and let's say 90% of them make it through the first year, that's 900,000 businesses. And let's say each of those businesses employ just three people, the guy or gal who started it, you know, the people who account for it, the secretary who does the paperwork and mails out the stuff, the store clerk who mans the front desk of the store, whatever it happens to be. That is 2.7 million jobs. 2.7 million jobs. So when net new business formation is negative, you have exactly the opposite effect. Do you not? Yes, you do. The Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative think tank, to be granted, does a annual index of economic freedom. And the index is comprised, it comprises of four categories: the rule of law, limited government, regulatory efficiency, and open markets. The United States ranking globally has slipped 8 of the last 9 years. Guess which 8 years? Oh, yeah, Obama's 8 years. I guess that's just a coincidence. So out of all the world's countries, the United States, which was fourth in 2007, the year before Obama was elected, is now number 11. And Great Britain, our mother country, vaulted over the top of us to number 10. And I think we know enough about Great Britain to know that they are not necessarily known as a, shall we say, a bastion of business. How's that? So, the mostly free countries in terms of economies on the planet. Number 6 is Canada, 7 is Chile, and I happen to know from personal experience, having worked for clients down there on big fundos, which is what they call ranches, this to be true. Ireland, Estonia, the United Kingdom, and in number 11 spot, the United States. The top 5, Hong Kong, Singapore, New Zealand, Switzerland, and Australia. By the way, if you notice, Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, and Hong Kong is over in the Pacific Basin, the Asian continents, the rise of Asia. So, in explaining what was going on, and I'm going to quote from the study, Heritage said, quote, "Substantial expansion in the size and scope of government under the Obama administration, including through new and costly regulations in areas like finance." Remember, folks, I've talked to you about Dodd-Frank. "Healthcare, Obamacare, and the environment." We've talked about in previous shows the EPA running amok with water, air, you name it, has hit wide swaths of the economy, affecting almost every American in some way and reducing opportunities for non-governmental production and investment. Now, let's go to the next one. The United States is number 10. And that's in the area of innovation. Now, everybody says, including Obama, of course, you know, if he moves his lips, he lies, like the rest of the progressives. Everybody says, you know, America's number one, and we got Apple, and we got Microsoft, and we got Intel, and we got this and that and the other. Yeah, BS. The United States is now number 10 in innovation. It ain't number 1, it ain't number 5, it's number 10. And by the way, this is a relatively small group of countries, because many countries in the world have really no tech industries whatsoever. 56 nations, that's all there is on the planet, have some type of what they would call measurable, innovative, technological industries. We're number 10 on that list of 56. Quote, the indicators examined include such factors as research and development, technology, human capital, tax policy, trade barriers, and intellectual property protections. And that was that's a quote, by the way, from Stephen Ezell, E-Z-E-L-L, who did this particular study. Quote, countries are scored for their contributions, their detractions, and their overall impact on global innovation. So, do you know which countries came out on top? Finland and Sweden. Britain is once again ahead of the United States. Unbelievable. Clocking in at number 3. And we are number 10. I'm going to quote Ezell again. Quote, this is due to the U.S. government's relative underinvestment in R&D as a share of the country's GDP, weak innovation, incenting tax policies, as well as a middling performance in human capital. That's kind of a damning report, wouldn't you say? And if you couple that with the new business formations, you can see that we don't have new business formations, not just in mom-and-pop stores, you know, the candy store, or the house cleaning service, or the gardening service, or, you know, all those kind of standard type businesses that you would expect, the paint shop. We don't have new business formation in technology. It's run by several giants. They are multinational corporations. They conduct much of their research and development and much of their manufacturing and much of their customer-oriented quote-unquote service. As any of you know who have tried to call a helpline for any of these big companies, I mean, basically you got to tell the person on the other end of the line to repeat themselves because they're not speaking English. So that's all farmed out. And once again, the American economy and you and I suffer because of government laissez-faire would be giving the government a compliment. Government interventionist policies, the government's picking of winners and losers, and the diversion of government funds which ought to be financing R&D in the technology industries, the diversion of that capital to such things as welfare and bombaphones and free stuff, and $256 billion, that was another study that just came out last week, $256 billion, which in one way, shape, or form, illegal immigration, in other words, non-control of our borders, costs us a year. If you take all those funds, all of which are designed by the progressives and the globalists to, number one, create a global system, and number two, to maintain their power by buying the votes of hapless people that they convince are victims and therefore have to rely on the elite and the government that the elites run to create their sustenance, give them their housing, put fuel in their cars, and yes, even their cell phones. The diversion of all that capital means that that capital is not going into business, R&D, innovation. And it continues the downward spiral. So, innovation. Let me quote again. This is a Kauffman's Foundation study. It was actually from 2011. Kauffman is a well-respected economic think tank. Quote, without startups, that is new businesses, folks, without startups, net job creation for the American economy would be negative in all but a handful of years since 1980, unquote. Think about that. New business formation, was the difference between positive and negative job growth. In all but a few years from 1980 to now, that is a 36-year period. So, do we want new jobs? Yes, we do. Do we want good-paying jobs? Yes, we do. Small businesses are a part of the equation, but it is the formation of new businesses, new small businesses, which is the key to the equation. They are the job creators. Job creators. And new businesses, by the way, are classed as businesses which are less than 5 years old. So, the problem is, folks, is that new businesses, because of all this other crap, and I could spend three shows on this. Right now I'm trying to give you the, shall we say, the most important guts of the problem. The number of new business formations and the number of new businesses has been declining steadily since the late 70s. Steadily. And as I told you, there was a few years in there, 2008, 2009, 2010, there were actually more firms going under than new firms being formed. In fact, in 2013 was the first time that the percent of new firms being formed and the percent of firms closing their doors actually equalized. 2013. So, I'm going to end this little segment with one more survey. This was one done by the World Bank. Not that I trust those globalists. However, they do a ranking annually of all the countries in the world based on how easy it is to start a new business. And guess where we come in on that one? Any guesses? Miss Producer? No, not 15. Would you believe 49th? 49th, the United States of America, that supposed bastion of freedom, economic opportunity, open markets, capitalism, you name it. We come in at 49th on the planet when ranked as to how easy it is to start a new business. That is friggin' pathetic. And it's for all those reasons we went over before. The regulations, the lack of investment, the diversion of capital to vote-buying antics by the progressive elite who are running the government so they can stay in power, etc. We're going to get into this in more detail next week when we talk about what globalism is, what globalists who are progressives have planned, and what they've already implemented, and how they plan to implement the New World Order, as some people call it, or a global society over the next 10 years. You'll find it quite frightening. Do you know who's number one in terms of how easy it is to start a new business? New Zealand. Number two is Macedonia. Macedonia is number two, and the United States is 49. Wow. And you know, the progressives jump up and down on Trump, saying he's dark and he's gloomy and he's not positive, and all he talks about is problems. You know what? Guess what? These problems are real. Unless you address the problem, whether it's radical Islam, which the progressives, they can't seem to utter those words, or new business formation negatives, you can't solve the problem. So Macedonia. Number three is Canada. Number four, and I can go on. Great Britain, by the way, which is ahead of us in every category now, is now number 17. Wow. Do you know that Russia, it is easier to start a business in Russia than in the United States? Russia is ranked 41. Unbelievable. Let me just quote from this study. Quote, in New Zealand, An entrepreneur can complete the entire process of company formation in just a few hours through a single online procedure. Now, any of you folks who are listening to me know that while some states are easier than others, Wyoming is one of the easiest, Delaware is easy, Nevada is easy, when you get through with what you have to go through at the state level, and combine that with what you have to go through at the federal level, with the TIN, designated, all this crap, and the documents you have to draw, and all this nonsense. And I don't mean to dissuade any of you who are listening to me out there from being entrepreneurs. In fact, quite the contrary. You will never get rich working for yourself, folks. You will never, ever, ever get to the top rung of the ladder working for somebody else. You will only find satisfaction, in my opinion, and by satisfaction I mean freedom, financial stability, the all-important kind of elixir of the heart, working on something that you love, creating your own thing, by being an entrepreneur. I encourage you to be an entrepreneur. Despite the roadblocks and the heartaches and the time and the risk that's involved. But I will tell you that from my experience, starting a new business in some states is unbelievable. In Montana, which unfortunately has drifted toward progressive thought, as it's been invaded by liberals from the coasts, it can take you weeks to form a new business. The Montana Secretary of State is absolutely unfriendly to new businesses. And you would think this is a Western state with that old West spirit. No. Let me tell you that if you fill out one thing wrong on their many pages of papers, they won't contact you, they won't call you, they won't inform you, they will mail the papers back telling you to redo them by U.S. mail, and we all know how fast the mail is. And you can go through that procedure four or five times, because every time you send it in, they find something else. You know, some T you didn't cross, some I you didn't dot. In the case of Colorado's kind of in between. In the case of Wyoming, it's a great Secretary of State office, the last time I dealt with them. If you fill out something wrong on the form, which is pretty concise, just a few pages, they either call you or email you or fax you the problem. They'll even change it for you if you give them authorization. So it varies from state to state. It doesn't vary with the feds, though. You still have to get your TIN and fill this out and that out and the other thing. Anyway, the other things which are dampening, to be more specific, new business formation. Now, you folks who work for, you get a W-9, okay, your employees. And you folks who have your own businesses, you know what a W-9 is. It's what you give your employees. And it's that 6.2% contribution you make for your employees' Social Security. That's basically 6.2% more you have to bring in revenues and net revenues to make your business not fail. If you add to that the increased cost of health insurance, which if you're going to get good people, you have to offer in one way, shape, or form, you're talking about many, many, many thousands of dollars, even in the very first year of operation, that a new business has to somehow, through capital, through a loan, which is dangerous, obviously, then you have interest, or through sales, it has to generate. This is a huge impediment to to new business formation in the United States. Obamacare took a problem. You know, health care was kind of problematic before Obamacare. I mean, there were some things that the insurance companies were doing which were outrageous, not honoring pre-existing conditions and aided and abetted by the government, making sure they didn't compete with one another, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the non-competition, of course, was enhanced by Obamacare. The biggest recipients of Obamacare largesse and increases in rates, despite the fraud, the criminal fraud perpetrated by this administration, including Barack Obama and the American public, in telling us our premiums would go down $2,500 and we could keep our doctor and we could keep our hospital and you know all the rest of the crap, is the increase in health care costs. I mean, we have seen health care costs increase since the passage of Obamacare by at least 10% a year, and that's in the good states. We have seen some states suffer increases of 30% to 40% or more a year. I'm not going to get into all the reasons why. You want to know why? I warned about this when Obamacare was not yet passed. You can go back and listen to those shows. Just type Obamacare in the search bar. You get five or six shows, including my interviews with national guests, which includes people who were for Obamacare that worked for the administration. I mean, it was obvious what was going to happen. The progressives, by the way, as a sideline, are now saying the only way to fix Obamacare, remember, these are the same guys who said it was going to work like a charm, the only way to fix Obamacare, with exchanges collapsing and insurance companies pulling out and all sorts of other bad stuff happening, I mean, there are now five states, folks, where there is no exchange. You can't get Obamacare. No insurance company will insure you through Obamacare. Is to go to a public option, i.e. a single-payer system, like Canada or Great Britain. And if you have friends in Canada, as I do, having owned ranches up there, and friends from Great Britain, which I do, having consulted to some of them, you will know that those systems are horror shows if you don't have money to kind of buy your way into the system and buy the doctor you need at the time you need him. Otherwise, you can wait 18 months for, like, to have your fingernail replaced. In any event, it is those costs which have also dampened new business formation, made it much more difficult. And the last of those is the self-employment tax. This is a nasty tax, which here's the bottom line. If you own your own business, there's another additional tax that you pay, which is called the self-employment tax. If you take all these different costs, health care, the 6.2% of gross income for your employees, and yourself, if you pay yourself a salary, if you take all that stuff, you're talking about an extra 20 to 25%. In revenues you have to generate in the first year to not go under. And that makes the task daunting for folks. All this stuff needs to be fixed. Now, understand that globalists, and we're going to talk about this next week, don't want it fixed. Okay, globalists are not in favor of little entrepreneurs doing well. They like the big multinational corporations because that is part of the global structure. Any of you ever see that movie, James Caan was in it, Rollerball, where it was like one global government and they had the rollerball teams? And all the rollerball teams, each one was sponsored by a multinational corporation. There was like no countries. It was just kind of corporations rather than countries. Well, it's kind of like that. Kind of like that. Now, How we fix that, we're going to get into as a part of next week's show with globalism. Because one of the ways to defeat globalism is to promote entrepreneurial success, entrepreneurial expansion, new business formation. The more self-sufficient and self-reliant we are individually, and as a people, and as a nation, the more resistant we will be, the better able we will be to defeat the really powerful forces of globalism coming at us full tilt. And this all kind of ties into voter fraud, the next segment. Because globalists and progressives can't move forward their global agenda unless they're in power, unless they're in office, unless they control the purse strings of government and your health care and your food and everything else. And one of the ways that they get this done, besides taking your money and giving it to somebody else to buy their vote, is voter fraud. Do you notice that it's always the progressives that say there is no voter fraud? That voter fraud is difficult? That picture IDs are a burden on the poor, the same poor they bought the votes with, you know? I mean, they don't want their welfare dollars wasted with somebody who's not going to vote. Well, voter fraud is a very real thing. They estimate that 2.5 million illegal, fraudulent votes were cast in the 2012 election. Now, assuming that virtually all of those went to Obama, if you gave Romney 2.5 million more votes and you took away from Obama 2.5 million votes, you'd come up with basically a tie vote in the popular sense. A tie vote in the 2012 election rather than Romney losing by 5 million. I gave you the example of Franken at the beginning of the show. Does this all kind of ring a bell for you now? All right. So the Fourth Circuit, I talked about this a few shows ago, ruled, this includes North Carolina, key state, by the way, that the 9 states under its jurisdiction could not enforce voter ID laws that they had on the books, i.e. they could not enforce having to show a picture ID to vote. Now, the other 41 states, the appeals courts, and I talked about this 2 shows ago, what Obama's done with the appeals courts, those states are free to pass voter ID laws. And they have. Many of them have. Where at least you have to show a picture ID. Which, by the way, if you are old and feeble, if you are poor and destitute, you can get a picture ID. Literally, the state will do a picture ID for you for free and mail it to you or deliver it to you. That's how easy it is to get a picture ID. And obviously, you can't get onto a plane without a picture ID. You can't get into, ironically, the Democratic National Convention without a picture ID. You really can't do squat. You can't buy liquor without a picture ID or cigarettes without a picture ID. Or drive a car, but you don't need a picture ID to vote. Now, if you don't think illegal aliens are casting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of votes, you're a fool. Okay? There's a reason that illegal aliens are in this country, that they're welcomed with open arms at the border, and that their whereabouts is not tracked. Or shall we say that if their whereabouts is tracked, they are being shuttled off to formerly red districts and states to try and turn them purple or blue, i.e. Colorado. perfect example. So, and once an illegal vote is cast, folks, it's done. It's like almost impossible to undo it. I gave you the Franken example. And that was black and white that these felons had voted. It was black and white they got caught. It was black and white. The whole thing was black and white. And couldn't get it reversed. Once again, because of, in part, because of the stacking of the courts. By progressives. Okay. Anyway. The law, which requires voter ID, has been ironically upheld by the Supreme Court in Crawford versus Marion County Election Board. That was a 2008 Supreme Court ruling. I want you to know that the vote turnout increased after the law's implementation to show picture ID in Indiana, and that there's been no compelling evidence in any jurisdiction requiring picture IDs that voting has been suppressed or decreased. Quite the opposite, voting has increased. Perhaps because subliminally people know that there is protection there and that their vote counts. I mean, how excited are you to vote if you think your vote is not counting, if it's being crossed out by an illegal or fraudulent vote somewhere else? You're not very excited. On June 29th of this year, however, the Fourth Circuit, which has been loaded by Obama with progressive judges, struck down the North Carolina law, which was identical to the Indiana law, that they had to show picture IDs. There was a three-judge panel in the Fourth Circuit that ruled on that. There was a Clinton appointee, gee, I wonder if that had anything to do with Clinton running right now, and two Obama appointees. That's kind of a stacked deck on that panel, wouldn't you say? So they kind of disregarded the evidence the law was enacted to deal with a real ballot integrity problem and instead manufactured it as a Republican conspiracy, quote, to deprive black citizens of the right to vote. One of the judges, Motz, M-O-T-Z, wrote in her opinion that the law targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision. This is despite, of course, the fact that the law applies to all citizens of North Carolina, regardless of their race, of their creed, of their color, of their age, of their religion, you name it. And it was regardless of the fact that North Carolina offers free, F-R-E-E, picture ID cards to anybody who wants them, who can prove that they are a citizen of North Carolina and a citizen of the United States. So, Motz also wrote in the opinion that there was no such thing as voter fraud, that was a trumped-up conspiracy of the right, kind of parroting what her appointment manager, Clinton, has said, you know, the vast conspiracy of the right. Anyway, There's a number of really good articles. There's actually two books. They're written by a Wall Street journalist who writes columns. His name is John Fund, F-U-N-D. And one of them is called Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. And then on August 14th, he put out an article. You can Google this up. Media are flat wrong to dismiss voter fraud concerns. The book is, it's kind of tedious reading, but packed with information. The article is well worth reading. I talked several weeks ago about Arlen Specter, the Republican senator who turned Democrat, jumping up and down over voter fraud, even when he was a Democrat, knowing that voter fraud was rife in Pennsylvania, particularly Philadelphia. Pennsylvania, by the way, folks, being a key state for Trump and for Hillary. Imagine that. So, I'm gonna quote here. Adams, this is another guy who's a voter specialist. He's an attorney, and his name is Christian Adams. Quote, "The integrity of our elections is suffering from a coordinated, multi-million-dollar attack on multiple fronts. It's far more complicated than one centralized, high-power conspiracy to rig the elections. A more sophisticated understanding of what is happening is essential to combat the real threat. I'd wager that more votes are cast by ineligible..." I'm continuing the quote. "I'd wager that more votes are cast by ineligible aliens than by those who are impersonating voters." So you can see why voter ID laws, picture IDs, are extremely important. There's a number of examples of voter fraud. You know, we saw what happened in the 2000 election with the hanging chads, you know, the paper ballots. We now have, I believe, 11 states that are all or partial digital voting. There was a professor at Princeton who actually did a study and showed that if given 7 minutes, that's 7 minutes alone with a voting machine that registered electronic votes, digital votes, that he could alter the vote tally by simply taking out kind of the control card. I'm not a technical whiz. The control card and putting in another one in the back of the computer. In fact, that only took 10 seconds of the 7 minutes. The rest of the time was unscrewing the back panel and screwing it back on. Yet our progressive politicians tell us that that's impossible. And, of course, we have the Department of Homeland Security coming out a month ago. I posted the article saying that it was so concerned about voter fraud. This is like Jay Johnson, right? An Obama lackey, a progressive. They're so concerned about voter fraud that they better watch over all the voting processes in the United States. Oh, gee. Now, that gives me a warm fuzzy. Wow. Our problems are solved. Voter fraud is at an end, folks. You bet. Anyway, the voter ID laws are one step in combating voter fraud. Another step is you, folks. If you see, first of all, volunteers, poll watchers, get involved in this election, get involved in the election process. Acquaint yourself with all the various types of voter fraud, from improper address, switching of districts, dead people voting, dogs voting, illegal alien, you name it. And be ready to sound the alarm and beat the drums if you see it. And number two, as voters, keep your eyes open when you go to the polls. You know how we're being told to be ever more vigilant? Well, let me tell you, on election day, you should be really vigilant. Take a look at those machines. You know, I've actually walked behind some of the digital machines, see if there's any scratch marks around the screws from people taking off the back panel. Check your vote. If you voted for John Doe, make sure that your vote got registered for John Doe. Don't trust in that machine to register your vote properly, or for the vote to be counted or compiled properly at the end of the day when that machine spills its digital guts. We can all get involved in this. And, of course, we can elect people who believe not only in the sanctity of borders, over which many illegal voters come, but the sanctity of the voting process in the Constitution. That would be a good first step, because you're not going to change any of this stuff without changing now the judiciary that's been tainted by Obama, severely tainted, changing the laws and changing the court rulings which will follow after the laws are challenged. It is just the way it is. All right, now, for my last little segment here, I'm almost running over. If I lose you folks on AM, you can hear my last few minutes on the podcast at onthe rightsideradio.com. Here's a couple of the headlines. Obama's diversity plan in your neighborhood. I've talked about this on previous shows. You like your neighborhood? Well, guess what? Obama thinks that you are elitist and you are racist and you need other people in your neighborhood, and he's going to make sure that that happens. And this article is about that. There's an article on how secure is our election process. We were just talking about this, goes into more detail. Bill Bennett. Bill Bennett is a really wise political commentator, who, by the way, is AC-DC, right? He'll go Democrat or Republican. I mean, this guy is a true independent. He writes about why, what his view of Trump is. It is an article well worth reading. Well worth reading. And it gets into the whole globalism thing we've been talking about. Some shenanigans. CNN's Jake Tapper edits out Clinton's slip. You got to read that because CNN, like Clinton News Network, you know, they're in the tank for Hillary, including changing her quotes, omitting her quote, you name it. Soros secretly advanced scheme to admit illegal aliens. Gee, what a surprise. We've talked about that in a previous show. Soros secretly pushing for online voting scheme. What were we just talking about? You think George Soros, the richest progressive in the world, who is not above destroying the currency of whole countries, regardless of the detrimental effects of tens of millions of citizens like Great Britain in 1992, do you think George Soros is promoting an online voting scheme because the votes will be accurately registered and it'll be fair? Think again. Eight people stabbed by man shouting Allahu Akbar. This is a terror article. It goes back to the to that deal in the mall in Minneapolis. Israeli military boosts troop presence in West Bank. There's some things happening internationally which nobody's tracking right now that you need to be aware of. You're going to love this next one. Uma Abedin to be Clinton's Secretary of State. Oh, that's just grand. So the woman who wrote for a rabid pro-Sharia magazine, whose editor-in-chief was her mother, with parents who are mucky-mucks in the Muslim Brotherhood, she's going to be our Secretary of State. That is just great. Kasich meets President Obama to help with TPP. So John Kasich finally shows his colors, right? Not only did he show his colors by breaking his pledge to help the Republican nominee, not only was he just rude in not showing up at the Republican convention held in Cleveland, Ohio, the state that he's a governor of, but now he's trying to help Obama pass the Trans-Pacific Trade Pact, which, folks, it's a great idea, but the way that's been written, Trump is 100% right. It absolutely screws the United States. And by the way, surrenders, here goes the globalism again, much of our sovereignty in a number of areas to this group of nations involved in the trade pact. So, those are a couple of the articles that are posted, and they'll give you a feel for it. Next week, I think you're going to really like, and I think you will find really informative. It's the first time I think anybody has really tied together the dots of the globalist movement, the power of the globalists, and how they intend to affect, quote-unquote, the NWO, the New World Order, whatever. You'll find it really fascinating. And you will start to understand why there is such vitriol and hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, being thrown at Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump may be many things, but he's not a globalist. He is an American. And he is for American values. America first. But next week is not a political thing for Donald Trump. He just happens to be a man whose time has come in a time who needs such a man. It is about globalism versus national sovereignty, and it will affect you, and it will absolutely affect your kids and your grandkids and generations after that. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.